Hello, and welcome to another episode of Kyler's Cars. This episode, I am just going to be, well, ranting. It's going to be a quick rant about supercars. Specifically, how I just don't really like modern supercars anymore. They just don't make me excited like they used to about 10, 15 years ago. And I'm going to try to explain why. This is not going to be a fact-checked, independently reviewed episode. So if that's something you're looking for, that this is not going to be it. But this is just kind of my opinion on, I guess, the state of the automotive industry and the supercars that you see nowadays. But before we get started on this nonsensical rant, I would like to turn over now to the sponsor, Columbia Wellness.
Taking care of your mental health is just as important as your physical health. At Columbia Wellness, we offer behavior health care for all ages. From telehealth counseling to inpatient addiction care, we offer the level of support your mind needs. Don't wait to enjoy life again. Give us a call at 360-423-0203. At Columbia Wellness, your wellness is our passion.
It's pretty likely that you've seen the movie The Incredibles. You're probably already aware of the famous quote that Syndrome says, "If everyone's super, no one will be." I think today that can be applied to modern supercars. It seems like every other day now, you go on Motor Trend, you go on Instagram, you go on wherever, you see a new supercar from whether it be an established brand or some startup company come out with a 1,000 plus horsepower supercar, and it has this, you know, crazy design, and it has these crazy stats. You know, the phrase, they will be sold in X amount, and they've all been sold already. That pretty much ends every single one of these articles. And it's kind of been like this for, I don't know, maybe 5-8 years, something like that. I say that because it's probably around 2017 when I last truly kind of had any interest in supercars. That was when the Holy Trinity cars like the Porsche 918, McLaren P1, and Ferrari LaFerrari were around and were at their prime. That was also around the same time that the Gordon Murray Automotive T50 was announced. Funny enough, that car is actually ending production this month. It probably already has ended production. That was kind of the last hurrah, I think. I mean, nowadays, I might once in a while see a supercar. Like, recently, I went over the Corvette 01X, which is basically a more extreme version of the extreme version of the Corvette. I mean, that kind of held my attention for maybe a day or two. Just, you know, it's not often that a company like Chevy will come out with a car that can allegedly hit 60 in under 2 seconds, and that's, you know, ultimate hypercar territory. So that's kind of cool, but you're probably not going to see a 01X. I was actually talking to the owner of Bud Clary, the Chevy dealership here in Longview, and he was saying that they're not going to get any 01Xs. That's for, you know, the super rich people, the high profile figures. The best we'd probably see is just a Z06. We actually had a Z06 in the dealership a few months ago. A pretty neat rig, but this still doesn't hold a candle to the types of cars that I was really passionate about growing up as a kid, you know, in the late 2000s, you know, 2010s. This is kind of subjective, but I think a lot of people, a lot of car enthusiasts might agree with this sentiment or might even feel stronger towards it than I do. I'm sure you've heard the saying, they don't make them like they used to. Well, I mean, it's true. I mean, supercars now are, you know, pretty much you could consider them digital. I mean, everything is controlled by these hyper-intelligent computer systems. And this would be seen as kind of like witchcraft, you know, 20, 30 years ago. It seems like every single manufacturer now has this fancy like driving system, torque vectoring, you know, traction control that just kind of keeps you planted on the road and can kind of distribute the power where it needs to be at any given moment. point to kind of just make use of all that power. And then you have all the crazy arrow, the tech that goes in that. I think like the Ferrari F80, that car has an insane amount of arrow, and it has a big wing that, you know, moves up and down on its own. And I mean, that was something that was just coming out in the 2000s, I think, but it's become so much more prevalent now, especially in cars like the F80 and the McLaren Senna and cars like that. But supercars, even in the last like 15, 20 years, were, you could say they were analog, because really the only way to get the most out of that car was you know, it was completely dependent on the driver, you know, having the skills to be able to get the most out of that car. You know, the traction control was not an aid that helped you go faster. It was an aid that prevented you from crashing. So the only way to get the most out of that car was to turn off the traction control, take off pretty much all the driving aids, and just have really precise steering and, you know, throttle control. So a lot of people, therefore, would say that, you know, supercars back then, supercars like the, you know, Porsche Carrera GT, you know, they were more raw and primitive. But the at that point in the 2000s, you pretty much got a good balance between modern build quality and modern tech, but you still had that kind of bonkers, you know, dangerous behavior. And as morbid as it sounds, I think that kind of knowing that at any moment that car could just bite you or kill you, it's appealing. It's, you know, I watched one review with the Ferrari F80. He was saying that the Ferrari now, you know, they used to just be little toys that would break, but he was saying that the F80 is a actual car now. It's a car that you can use every day. It's, you know, well built. And I think for, you know, non-car enthusiasts, that I totally understand if you hear that and think, okay, why is that a problem? Why is that a problem that, you know, this a Ferrari actually works? I think, you know, the simplest way to kind of describe it would be an old Ferrari, an old Lamborghini. It's the kind of car where its flaws kind of help give it character, just like a human being. You know, we all have flaws, we all have our shortcomings, but in a way, it's kind of what makes us more likable at times. And I think that's the same kind of mentality with these older, you know, supercars, older cars in general. You know, they may not be as well packaged, well built out of the factory as your contemporary cars, but you know, you lose some of that soul, some of that X factor, the thing that you can't really pinpoint to, but it gives the car character, passion, and just makes you fall in love with that car. Another reason that I feel supercars were more interesting 10 or 20 years ago is because they seemed more exclusive. I say that because from, you know, my standpoint, there was a clear hierarchy. You know, you would have sports cars, higher-end sports cars, let's say the Porsche 911, the Audi R8 was kind of a step up. And then you would also have the entry-level supercars. You know, in 2005, 2006, you had the Ferrari F430, Lamborghini had the Gallardo. And then a step up from that, basically, you would have the Lamborghini Murciélago, and then you would have, you know, the Carrera GT, the Mercedes McLaren SLR, and then a tier higher up than that, you would have cars that are more limited, that were more bespoke, the Ferrari Enzo. You even had cars like the McLaren F1, which, you know, even in the 2000s was getting kind of old, but it was still a legend, an absolute legend. Still could keep up with cars of the time. That was how good it was. So you have the Enzo, McLaren F1, Bugatti Veyron. There was a, you know, clear hierarchy of, you know, each level of sports cars, super sports cars, hyper cars. And there was, you know, just a notable handful of, you know, cars in each category. Now it just seems like the market has been oversaturated, particularly in high-end, the super sports cars, the hyper cars, the ultimate series cars. I think of McLaren and how in the last few years they've came out with like 3, 4, maybe 5 different ultimate series models. I mean, they still have like an entry-level car and a, you know, mid-range model, but they've been cranking out, them and Ferrari too have been cranking out, you know, limited edition bespoke models. And it just gets kind of tiring, to be honest, because you keep getting told that this is, you know, the next level in performance and design. And I just see so many multi-million dollar supercars, and I just think, okay, great. Okay, I'm looking forward to next week when another one shows up from who knows where. They just seemingly come from nowhere, and I don't care anymore. It doesn't I'm sure they're all fast and interesting and capable in their own rights, but, you know, it's just when you're constantly getting knocked with the idea that here's another, you know, hyper ultimate supercar, then it just doesn't really have the same effect anymore. You know, one thing I think Top Gear did well, especially in their earlier series, is that most of the content would kind of revolve around, you know, sports cars, ordinary cars. They would have the, you know, occasional supercar, but it's usually like one or two specific models, say the Lamborghini Murcielago or the Ferrari 360, Ferrari F430, cars like that. There were just a handful, kind of like what I was saying before. And I think just because they were less, you know, well-known models, that just made them feel more special that way, because, you know, nowadays, even if at the end of the day, most of these supercars are going to be, you know, tucked away in a garage, there's just a seeming like countless number of supercars. And I think that also kind of it gets reflected in modern racing games. Ironically, the more common cars, the more city, streets, basic cars, sports cars, there tends to be considerably less of those in the video games. 90% of the cars in a video game today are just supercars or hypercars. Like, they're not rare. They don't, you know, they make you think that they really aren't as rare as they truly are. And that's kind of a shame, I think. But I think ultimately, the reason that I just don't really care anymore is because supercars are more than just really fast machines. Supercars are also meant to invoke a strong reaction. They are meant to be emotional. I think of, I'm going to go back to Top Gear. This is actually a not well-known episode, I think. It was from Series 1, so it was before James May got on the show. They did a segment where they brought a, you know, group of supercars to grade school kids. And you had a Nissan Skyline GTR. You had, what was it else? A Pagani Zonda. And then something else, I don't remember. But at the very end of it, a Lamborghini Countach just appears, and immediately, like that, all the kids just started running over to it, climbing on it, screaming, and just yelling, be like, oh my gosh, what is that? This is so cool. How fast does it go? And, you know, the Lamborghini Countach, as you probably already know, was the supercar icon. Such a radical design, and, you know, a lot of it really wasn't practical. I mean, that big wing in the back, that was never intended to be there. That actually took away from the car's top speed. It didn't even help with downforce. Literally, it was just an aesthetic choice, and Lamborghini just ended up rolling with it. So, you know, that car was pretty much a car that got your emotions going. It wasn't a good car by any means. You know, it's heavy and it's impractical, grossly impractical, but it was so cool. It was the poster car of the 80s. Imagine if you were a teenager growing up and you had that car on your poster, and then now, today, seeing that car out on the road, the kind of emotional impact it would have on you. That's what distinguishes a supercar from a supercar. And I think the car that would do that for me is the Lamborghini Murcielago. In fact, a couple of years ago now, while I was in Spokane for college, I encountered a bright yellow Lamborghini Murcielago going through North Country Homes Road, this residential area that's pretty close to Whitworth University. I never saw a pre-LP Murcielago before up until that point. I saw a lime green Lamborghini Murcielago LP640 in 2020 during a Halloween car show, and I thought that was pretty cool. I mean, that was the first time I've ever seen that car, and, you know, believe me, I was pretty excited. I got pictures with it, and I checked it out up close and stuff, but that yellow Murcielago, while I was driving through and got just a basic glimpse of that Murcielago, and I just remember exclaiming, are you kidding me? And, you know, I screamed that. I'm not going to try to imitate that here because that would genuinely be awful. But that was the only time that I've ever seen a supercar. I've seen Lamborghini Huracans. I've seen McLaren, you know, 570Ss, 650Ss, Arturas. I've seen, you know, Ferraris. And that Murcielago was the car that made me truly emotional. Nothing has ever came close to having the same emotional impact that that Murcielago had. And that is the type of encounter that can truly change a man, truly change his outlook and change his direction in life. I mean, obviously, as a Christian, that's not something that I should, you know, focus my life on. But, you know, the truth is that car, you know, I love that car. I have I guess you could say an emotional connection to it. I have, I mean, it was the first car that got me into the world of supercars. You know, I would play Need for Speed games and that Murcielago was on the cover of everything and it was in the games and it was like, you know, seen as a really powerful, prestigious, fast car. And the Murcielago was a big, heavy, just lumbering slab of iron with a really powerful V12 engine made under Audi. Technically, but it was still very much an Italian supercar. The seating position is a little wonky. Bits probably fall off. You don't get that kind of car anymore. You don't get, you know, a gated manual supercar anymore. It's all automated. You have these really super quick dual clutch gearboxes, which, you know, they're great for speed and track performance. But like I said, there's more to a supercar than just raw speed and performance. And we're getting at a point now where it just seems like it's getting kind of unnecessary. I mentioned the Gordon Murray T50 earlier, and, you know, that car's philosophy wasn't to be a, you know, 1,000-plus horsepower supercar, be as powerful and brutish as it could possibly be. Their focus was on lightness and balance and, you know, being the purest expression of driving that you could have. Like the McLaren F1 before, that car has a 3-seat layout, central driving position. It has a V12, but it has a, you know, really light, high revving, fast revving V12 engine. And on top of that, there is also a fan that helped with stability. There's pretty much no other car that has ever existed that had a moving fan in the back. And again, they were all about lightness in that car. There were no compromises. They literally cut holes into different components because if it wasn't there, if it didn't need to be there for, you know, rigidity or strength, then, you know, take it out because that's just adding unnecessary weight. Top Gear magazine, different Top Gear, basically. They still said that this was probably the best driving car that they would ever get. And it was basically a last hurrah to analog driving. And, you know, it's pretty likely that what they said is true. They don't make them like they used to. They don't feel like they used to. And I've been trying to think of why exactly this might be the case now. I mean, maybe it's just my own personal bias because I grew up with cars like the Murcielago, Ferrari Enzo, Porsche Carrera GT. You know, it could just be my own bias. Maybe, you know, there were a lot more supercars in that era, kind of like how there is now, there seems to be now. Maybe because of the internet and how invasive it is nowadays, it's easier to discover new supercars, more niche supercars, which otherwise wouldn't have been known 20 years ago if the shows that you're watching don't really talk about those supercars. So I don't know, could maybe also have something to do with the fact that there are more, you know, billionaires out there and they want more cars to collect. Maybe, you know, the car manufacturers see a, you know, market in that. They see, oh, okay, if we keep making multi-million dollar one-off things and these guys are buying it, then, you know, why not make more? I think it's interesting that I'm trying to get into this sphere, the automotive journalism world, when truthfully, there aren't really a whole lot of new cars, if at all, that I really jive with, that I really get emotional about. Most of the cars that I care about and love haven't been made for, you know, at least 10 years. So, but at the end of the day, I just think of that one moment that I had with that Murcielago, and I think that just seals the deal. Truthfully, this probably wasn't a really well-fleshed-out rant. There's probably a lot that I missed out, and I think looking back on this, I can think, oh, I should have said this or mentioned that, or I could have said it this way. With all that being said, before I go on another stupid tangent, thank you again, dear listener, for listening, and I hope to see you again. You take care.